Whenever I visit France, I always see lots of top bottles for sale, but when I get back home, those same bottles can be much harder to find, if not impossible. That's why I use idealwine.com. At idealwine.com, I can buy wines directly from France for delivery directly to my home. They have new auctions every week, and the fixed price selection is equally awesome. Clos Vougeard, Chateau Reyes, and Ulysse Collan, as well as many more greats from all over France, are regularly available on the website. Best of all, it is simple and hassle-free to buy them. Ideal Wine handles all the customs and logistics hurdles for you and for me. Wines are ordered with a couple of clicks, and then they arrive. It is simple. Check out idealwine.com for more information. That's IDEALWINE.com to find what you'd like to be drinking.
I'll Drink to That, where we get behind the scenes of the beverage business. I'm Levy Dalton.
I'm Erin Scala.
And here's our show today. Marie Veyron of Chateau Bourgneuf, and then also Le Bernardin, where she's a sommelier. Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Olivia. How are you?
Very nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
So you were born in 1985.
Yes. I'm born in Pomerol, right bank of Bordeaux.
What was that like, being born? What was that? No, but I mean, what was that like as a kid?
I think it went well. How was it like? It was, I was surrounded by the vineyard, Chateau Bourgneuf. I'm the seventh generation. And the third kid, it's been, I didn't realize how lucky I was. To me, it was very quiet. It was a very small village. You have only one butcher, one bakery. It's not even a street. You see only vines everywhere. Pomerol is pretty flat. You have just a little plateau, maybe only 40 meters high. And you don't see a lot of people, or you see always the same people. So it seemed to me very boring. But I always loved the cycle of the vine and following up with that and being involved with that as a kid during the harvest, and then growing up doing more stuff in the cellar with my father. So it's how I got involved into wine, in a very natural way, and following up my father and being with them also for lunch. And because my mother wouldn't leave me at school for the lunch, so I would go back. I was lucky. I was really lucky, I feel. I would be at home to have my lunch with them and listening to them already speaking about wine all the time. It's not boring. It was boring at some point. Sometimes I hated it. But looking back at it, I learned a lot already there because I was already smelling in their glass and I was already having a little micro sip.
What was your dad like? I mean, what is he like?
He is like a farmer. So my father doesn't travel. If you want to see him, you have to go there. He has no cell phone either, no email. So he's like a prehistoric animal. But it will teach you a lot about the history of the appellation, the history of the vineyard. He is a real farmer, anxious in the way that I remember he's always looking at the sky, always worried about the next day, the next hour when it's getting rainy, if some hail is coming, if the veraison is not happening. Well, he's always looking at the sky, and I have always this souvenir of him, very, very anxious. That's why it didn't really seem appealing to me to work with wine, to make wine. To me, it seemed very a source of anxiety.
But when did that switch happen? I mean, when did you? Because now you work with wine every day, so.
Yes. The fact to go away from Pomerol, I moved to Paris to study journalism. It was interesting, but lack of sense to me. So I was missing something. I was missing content. And I found myself quite lost. Good to be successful with my studies. Okay, it went well, but no job at the end necessary. So after my license in journalism in Paris, I went back to Bordeaux and applied and started this study about wine marketing in a business school. So I wanted to mix my skills in journalism, in and in marketing and in business, but to wine. So it, how I went back to wine and being again in Bordeaux, it's been challenging for me because I was happy at the very first place to leave Bordeaux. But I went back and I think I started little by little to like it again, to love it again.
Do you think there'd been some changes in the meantime? I mean, being born in 85, I feel like for the right bank, that was a period of real ascension for the wines. In a wine economy, I can imagine that there would be a lot of changes.
Yes, it was a good time for Bordeaux, both banks. It was a very good time, early 90s. Also a change in the vineyard, some harvest machine. You wouldn't see anymore some big machine, for instance, after the end of 80s. So the quality also evolved in a certain way, more precision in the vineyard, but economically wise, it was like a big blossom. It was excellent. I remember, I was little, but I remember the parties at home. I remember the parties in the entire region. Bordeaux was living really well, very, very well. It was like a golden time, I feel.
Did you have contact with the previous generation? I mean, did you know your grandparents?
Yes. I saw my grandfather working with my father since he was in the vineyard at 14 years old. So I was too little maybe to speak about wine with my grandfather, though. But I saw him involved and working with my father, yes.
Because it seems like in the right bank, I mean, for me, for a guy who's never been to Bordeaux, right?
Yes.
It seems like
when are you coming?
Yeah, yeah, not soon enough. It seems like there's a lot of small family ownership parcels in Pomerol compared to Bordeaux as a whole.
Yes, it's definitely family oriented because of the size. The size is still like a farmer size. We have 9 hectares, mostly they are divided in 4 parcels. And the average of per producer in Pomerol is about 5 hectares per producer. It's only 150 winemakers. It's small. You know everybody. You know everybody. And you have some, but you don't have a lot of big investors. I think Pomerol preserved so far, and I hope it will last, preserved pretty well its identity and its doors open, but not to everybody.
No, why do you think that is? Like, why Pomerol in particular for that kind of ownership, because it's not everywhere.
I think the spirit of the family is quite strong. It becomes difficult when the children disagree and one of them want to sell, and the two other or the other one who cannot buy the other part. But I feel like the spirit, it may be some naive, but really the spirit of the family are very strong there. And even the less known chateau in Pomerol definitely fight, even if they are not that known. They are approached by big investor, and they fight to keep it, even if they don't make a lot of money of their wine.
There's some sense of a continuity, like you guys have, like the 7 generations.
Yes, yes, exactly. Also, it's a matter of being aware about what you have in your hands. And this kind of family always did wine. What do you want? What could they do after? Buy a big house in Cap Ferret or Arcachon, and they would be bored. Like my father, if he would stop, he would never, sorry, retire. It's impossible. And those families are the same. They cannot stop making wine.
So when you got back, were there things that had already changed between when you left and when you got back? Did you notice changes in your own region?
Definitely more investors, definitely more, but mostly on the left bank. And also the architecture. The lets came changed a lot, like with big cellars, with fancy architecture. Some of them are beautiful, some of them a little less. But this definitely was a real change. It doesn't mean I didn't see them before, because from Paris I was coming back quite often and enjoying to be in Pomerol again. I was missing Pomerol. But living in Bordeaux and in the region itself, yes, because I was visiting wineries every weekend almost, being received by all the big communication PR services. It was not being received by a winemaker itself or the family, depending on where you are, of course. But most of the time, I remember, because of the program I was doing at school, we were hosted by PR service, PR department, not by the winemaker anymore.
So that must have been a big different view of Bordeaux for you.
Yes, it was a very, maybe a more industrial way. And I was happy to be back in Bordeaux, but actually I was not that happy with the program. It was still a little far from wine. It was very business oriented.
It was a wine marketing, right?
Yes, totally.
At that time.
Yes.
But so for understanding Pomerol as a place where wine is made, your property is next to Trottoir, right?
Yes, we're a neighbor. It's one of my favorite wine.
Mine too, so, actually. I thought the Nine was great. Yeah.
Yes.
Like I really like the still today. You know, I don't drink Bordeaux every day, but I think
me neither.
Right now I like those wines.
It's a beautiful classic of the appellation to me. And I really love also Christian Wex. I love this kind of philosophy as vigneron. So we're right next to Trottanois, at the center of the appellation, at the end of the plateau. So we are surrounded by Trottanois, a little bit of Chateau La Cabane, but that we don't know really well in New York, and a little bit of Chateau Nena also, which has different parcels.
And so if I were to better understand what that means in terms of the soil types, because they're varied, right, in Pomerol?
Yes, even if it's very small, it's a beautiful patchwork of different kind of clays and gravels. Being close to Trottanois, we have one parcel that touch the vines of Trottanois. We share those beautiful gravels. We share this also beautiful blue clay, and then this very specific Crasse de Fer. So you find Crasse de Fer also in Tuscany, but I think that's it. And this is this oxidized iron that could apparently give this black truffle component when Pomerol gets some age.
Oh, okay. So there's a little bit of a red soil and there's a blue soil.
Absolutely, yes.
Are those fermented separately or...?
Yes, we ferment the parcels separately. My father did it, but not necessarily every year. But my sister, since she arrived in 08 to work with my father, she's doing that per parcel.
Because that would be interesting to taste the differences.
Yes, yeah. Of course. We have to. And she created a second wine, so also it helps to identify really well the best parcel.
It's 9 hectares, right, total?
9 hectares. Yeah, well, in a good year, it will be 35,000 bottles. In a good year.
What have been the good years? What are some of your personal favorites?
My favorite, I love 01. I really love 01. And I think it was so underestimated, but it's opening up so well now. And I prefer 01 than 2000, for instance. Like, I love 2000 things. I'm more into this kind of vintage with maybe less, of course, less heat. Not a less ripeness, but... Merlot is so important. We kept freshness and acidity. I love those vintages. 9, 10, beautiful, of course, but we just need to forget them for now. There is no interest to open them now. But 12 has something interesting. And actually, I'm surprised, but I enjoy when I open a 12 lately. It's not ready, but it's showing quite elegant already.
Is there a style for Pomerol in general? And then is there a Bourgneuf style? Like, are those two different things, or...?
I think Bourgneuf style is very close to Pomerol style. To me, it's the expression of a juicy and velvet Merlot. It has also this black currant and blackberries component. It has, with age, the black truffle to me is stunning. We have it a lot in Bourgneuf. We definitely have it a lot. And I'm lucky enough to taste a lot with my mother when I go back to Pomerol. And she, of course, exchanged so many wines with the other winemakers. I can taste Pomerol with age. And Trottanois can have this black truffle too, but I find it a lot in Bourgneuf. So I would say Bourgneuf has this black truffle, yes, very strong. But the texture is a classic of Pomerol, with weight on your tongue, long finish, and very silky texture.
So it's about 80-90% Merlot, right?
Yeah, 90 Merlot, 10 Cabernet Franc. My sister Frédéric would like to raise the percentage of Cabernet Franc just to 15. It's not a big... not a big change, but it means a lot because it's dealing with my father, you know. It's not easy to work with your parents.
What do you think Pomerol contributes to the grape variety? What does it bring to Merlot?
It sounds maybe too obvious, but yes, Pomerol has this beautiful clay, the smectic clay, the blue clay, that allowed the Merlot to not overripe also, that keep freshness for the Merlot. It's I always hear that it's easy to grow Merlot, that it's a grape that grow itself, that makes the wine itself. But it's easy to make a jam very fast. So we need this soil of Pomerol to make this kind of Merlot. It's totally related. It's totally connected. the specificity of this Merlot, it's thanks to the clay. And you have, of course, this beautiful expression of Merlot when you get at the top of the plateau with Vieux Château Sertan, with Sertan de Mai, with Petrus, of course, if you can taste it. Trotanois again, of course.
It's interesting with Pomerol because there's no classification like you'd find for the Left Bank or for Saint-Emilion. So does that imply that the people are different there? Like, does it imply that there's more community, or does it imply that there's less hierarchy within the social strata? Or
on a daily life, I don't know if it implies, if it changed anything, but it's definitely contribute to the identity of Pomerol. We always stepped out this classification call. And I'm glad we did. I'm glad the syndicat viticole stayed strong on that and didn't, because of course there were many temptations to create small groups within the appellation of the five prestigious Pomerol or the club of etc. But it's always stayed like this without classification. I think it's part of a huge identity of the appellation. I don't know if it changed something, but to be maybe. It changed in a way that it makes Pomerol different than Bordeaux. And Bordeaux had a hard time lately, and I think Pomerol stayed maybe more approachable with that.
So now that you work in the American market, because a lot of times with Pomerol, we hear that a lot of the wines go to the northern countries and like Belgium.
Yes.
And maybe there's a traditional audience in England. But I think here, even with the esteem for Petrus, and even with the big points that are given to properties like Trotanois and the wines there, I mean, you don't see the wines that much, right? Or do you?
No, you're right. I don't see Pomerol a lot, actually. And when I speak to guests, they don't necessarily know Pomerol. If I say Saint-Emilion, so I say Saint-Emilion right away. I say Pomerol is next to Saint-Emilion, the neighbor appellation. Oh yes, of course, Saint-Emilion, we know. But Pomerol is still not very well known here. It's a matter of quantity, maybe, of volume.
I think for me, speaking to you, you know, I have an idea of what Pomerol is that's really pretty much wholly defined by the wines I've had. But what's it like to like live there?
I think you have to have good friends, good books. it's a farmer life, like anywhere else, I think, in a very small village. But what is impressive is to have this farmer life, and at some point to seeing those people coming from everywhere. So even if you stay on site taking care of your vine, you have actually, and it's not a joke, the entire world coming to visit you. And that was really the funny part at home, because my father always told, that's why I don't need any cell phone. People are coming. That's fine. I don't need to travel. And I don't have time. I'm making my wine. I don't have time to travel. If they want to see, they come and that's it. So it would be paced by this kind of tasting, of visits. Otherwise, it's all about your vines. But living in Pomerol, of course, it's beautiful. You have a very unique light, especially at the end of the afternoon. Always a little pink. This is a very unique light in Pomerol, and it's beautiful to grow up there. But it's quiet.
But you have this whole other life, and a lot of it has to do with restaurants and meeting people from around the world. So how did the restaurant side of your life get started?
I got involved in restaurant during the summer when I was in Saint-Emilion. I needed to make money for the summer, and I worked at Lambert du Décor. I was back then, so student in Paris, just spending the summer at home in Pomerol. And Lambert du Décor in Saint-Emilion, a great place to taste other wines than Bordeaux wines. It's really where I started to love also the restaurant atmosphere, the environment, the boiling energy you feel on the floor. So I was a waitress, so I was not involved in wine, but I was tasting already with the sommelier. There was a sommelier and a wine buyer. And I was also seeing all the winemakers because they were coming for lunch there. It was a very good cuisine, a very simple brasserie cuisine. And tasting a lot with the sommelier, with the owner, François Deligneries. So it was my first experience with restaurant industry. Very dynamic. A lot of covers, a lot of tourists, a lot of wine people as well. So it was a beautiful mix of audience. Then I got involved in restaurant industry in Paris. I worked with Le Bristol, Le Pavillon Le Doyen, a lot of Michelin star places, the Shangri-La Hotel, Guy Martin as well. So it was more fancy
Must have been exciting as a young person.
Yeah, it was really exciting. I was organizing wine dinner, wine conferences, wine a lot of wine pairings for private members and we were choosing those places, changing almost every month. So I did that for 3 years to select the winemakers that would come to Paris. I would taste with them. We would speak with the chef and them about the wine pairings. It was amazing. It was like, this was my real training. This was my school. La Sorbonne, the journalism that was interesting but boring to me, lack of sense again. And this real experience was the best.
Because I don't know what it's like in France. I mean, I think here there has been a celebrity culture of vigneron where people are celebrities. But what was it like being a French person working with French vigneron? Are they considered celebrities or are they considered...
I don't think so. It really belongs to the market of New York to see wine as so fancy. Not only New York, but the Chinese market, of course, also. But in France, no, I don't feel this big aura around the profession. Maybe it will come because it's what happened with chef. With chef and with the cuisine side, yes, it's like we always hear this term, you know, of rock star. And I'm sure the sommelier part will arrive with that. But so far, it's very old school. And I used to work in Paris with Philippe Forbrack, best sommelier of the world in 92. So very old school sommelier, Enrico Bernardo, also one of the best sommelier of the world. So it's what I learned from them. So I saw a kind of nice but severe side of the sommelier job. In a French restaurant, in Paris, the sommelier, I feel, are still, they are on the floor, but you don't feel them too much. You don't see them too much. I'm more talking maybe about Michelin star places compared to here when I am at Le Brandin. We are involved in the team. We are involved on the floor. We're part of the table almost. And people want that. People want interaction. They ask a lot of questions. They want you for every single course. That's beautiful. Yes. But we are, wow, so involved. And I feel like this is much more quiet, much more discreet on any Michelin star floor in France.
Restaurants in Europe in general, they value a sense of calm. And this is not the case at least in New York restaurants, where they value a sense of excitement, you know, yes, to go out.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a show. It's a show.
But it's interesting when you're at the 4-star level, because I feel like there's still the fusion of the two, like
yes,
where you see both sides. So how did it end up that you ended up working in New York at Le Bernardin?
So I arrived 3 years ago, starting at Le Colonial. I was done with Paris. It was getting so slow, economically wise. So I wanted to change. I needed to change. I needed to open up again my wine knowledge to go on another market. I had a beautiful experience years ago in New York already. And I remember loving the energy of the city. I remember also loving the choice and the offer of this wine market here.
Which had to be, both of those things, very different to how you grew up.
Yes, absolutely. Totally different. Totally. I was so ignorant when I arrived here and I saw certain wine lists. I saw going to the wine tasting for the trade, etc. I was learning so much and realizing how little I knew, really. I studied at Le Colonial, old French Vietnamese restaurant. It's Jean Goutal, the owner, who really made me come to New York. I was buying the wine for the restaurant, also being an assistant manager, getting more familiar with the real organization itself of a restaurant. I spent a year there, and then great opportunity meeting Aldo Som for an interview to be part of the sommelier team for the opening of the wine bar, Aldo Som Wine Bar. So this was my real opportunity to experience the sommelier job, the sommelier position. So I went, we opened 2 years ago, and I stayed 1 year on that floor, and then I've been promoted to Le Bernardin floor.
So how are those two things different? I mean, when you worked at the Aldo Som Wine Bar, what was that experience like? And then how's that different than Le Bernardin?
You have demanding clientele in both places, and it's what I love. But it's definitely more casual at Aldo Som Wine Bar. And it's what you want when you go to a wine bar. Huh? You don't want to be, you want to relax. You just finished your day at work. You had a ton of emails. You just want to forget now and enjoy. And it was our role to be friendly with guests. Le Bernardin doesn't mean we're not friendly with guests. We are, but we have to keep a certain distance maybe. And the cuisine is the main element of this floor. At Le Saumon Wine Bar, you have some tapas, some soft snack. And of course, it's signed by Eric Ripper as well. But Le Bernardin is the first highlight, is Chef Eric Ripper and the cuisine itself. So the sommelier is more than important, but I think we have to keep a certain distance in terms of behavior as well. And then you start to create something, of course. But a huge difference, of course, because it's a wine list of more than 2,000 wines with a very beautiful Burgundy references. It's a very classic list. And the wine bar has more, not adventurous wine, but more curiosities, maybe. Because you want to engage a real discussion also with guests. So you want to bring them where they about nothing they never heard of.
That's the inclination for you? That's what you're interested in doing?
Yes. Oh, I love that. What I prefer when I open a bottle and the guest is happy, that's the best. I love that. I love this feeling. But especially when you open something the guest didn't know at all. And it doesn't mean you don't want to open what you want to drink. It's always about the guest, of course. But listening to him, and we have a difference of culture. We don't use the same words for the same meaning sometimes. It's tricky to speaking about a dry or a sweet wine. We all have different terms. And the culture on the top of that is bringing sometimes certain confusion. But once you read your guest and you open the bottle, he will enjoy and he will remember and he take a picture and he order it the next time. That's the best part.
I mean, I feel like that's an experience that you've had in your own life because the wines that you were exposed to when you were younger were a definite set. And now you're working in a very diverse market where you're always encountering new things.
It's exactly the same pattern. If I was still in Bordeaux today, I would drink Bordeaux every day. And I wouldn't know, I think, a lot of other wines. But coming to New York, I mean, in Paris, of course, I tasted other wines, but foreign wines are not really present on the Parisian stage. Unfortunately, I hope it will change with maybe a new generation of sommelier, but you drink French wines in France. So it's really when I arrived in New York 3 years ago that I've been introduced to these wines.
Were there moments where you were like, oh, okay, I didn't know that this kind of thing even existed, or this is really special for me?
Of course, I knew California, but I really underestimated, to be honest, I really underestimated California. I saw California always as big, as powerful, as one block, as the kind of wine you eat at the same time. You cannot have more than a glass. You cannot have more than three sips. And I was having this really close-minded French speech. So having the chance to taste more from California, having the chance also to travel there, to do Harvard there at Santa Barbara, at Sandy in Domaine de la Côte, it opened up a new area of knowledge.
Oh, so you did harvest in Santa Barbara?
Yes.
What was that like?
It was intense. It was in 2015, so big heat. So they were picking at night, and me, I would help in the cellar with the winemaker, also John Faulkner and Roger Parra, of course, and Sashi Moorman. So it was good. I felt like going back to my childhood.
What did you learn from Sashi and John?
Definitely another way to make wine. A more Burgundy style to make wine. And what I pick up the most, it's maybe to let the wine go, to not trying to over-control. There is no right or wrong, but I think in Bordeaux we try to control a lot. We have a lot of also of consultants. It's not bad. It depends for who, for what you want to make. But what I learned, and I was surprised by that, because Rajet really told me, oh, what do you want to change? Let the wine do, not itself, but a little bit less interventionist from what I knew. I knew wine with a lot of, not at home though, but I saw wine made with a lot of control, of worries as well, that it wouldn't make it till the end of the fermentation or what. And there I saw, okay, no added yeast, no chemicals, nothing, and it went well.
I think you recently did some traveling back in France, right?
Yes.
So what was that like?
I tried to drink as much as Bordeaux as I could, because I don't drink Bordeaux here in New York. It's too expensive. Who has the space to have wine at home? Honestly, I have some, of course, but I cannot let them age. So I tried really to taste a lot of Bordeaux, to taste a lot with my parents, to taste a lot with my sister as well, because they drink much more Bordeaux than me. They have a much more sharp Bordeaux palate than me. I have it from my childhood, but I need to train myself more and more.
And did you go to Dutrève?
I went to Dutrève. Beautiful day. It was maybe, I didn't expect that. We spent maybe 10 hours together.
10?
Yes, 10. I think I never had as much as Beaujolais than that day. Beautiful to meet his daughter, Ophélie Dutrève. They work really well together. Meeting also Alex Foillard, the son, and seeing this new generation of Fleury. We were in Fleury, and so small, it reminded me of Pomerol, actually. A church, a school, a butcher, a bakery, that's it. But a life. There was this bar. After visiting Jean-Louis Dutrève, tasting with him in his cellar, Les Grives, of course, and it was beautiful to taste Les Grives with him. We went in this main place, like church place, you know, where you had this brasserie, and we met with the other children of winemakers there. So with Alex Voila, for instance. And we opened so many different Beaujolais. It was like an in-depth study of Beaujolais. Compared to Pomerol maybe, or to Bordeaux, there was definitely a life in Fleury because of this main place, because of this brasserie. Wow. This was different to me, to see another small village, but with a lot of life.
So I think a lot of people career-wise would have found it hard to make the jump from Le Colonial to working at Le Bernardin. So how did it happen for you, and how's the adjustment been?
I was also at the end of my experience at Le Colonial. I was at the end of a first visa. So naturally, this was either I would go back to France or somewhere else. Either I would go further in this city. And I wanted to stay. 1 year is nothing here. It's like 1 week. You don't do anything. So thanks to being involved in La Pole in San Francisco when I arrived here, I connected with so many people. I met so many people. And I didn't really want to do that. It happened really naturally. I didn't want to be that person, you know, who push to be introduced to him or her because it may happen something good to you or it's good to be connected with them. I didn't do that. But yes, I met people.
I remember that's when we met. That's specifically when we met.
Yes, exactly.
And I didn't feel that you were, you're just kind of an open person that seemed nice to talk to. Is what my memory of that.
Good. Encounter. Thank you for that.
So, unlike all those other people who push to meet me. No, not true, actually.
I'm sure there are a lot.
Yeah.
More than you think.
Sure.
And it's how I've been introduced to Aldo.
So what was the interview like with Aldo? Like, what did he ask you?
It's fast. Like Aldo some is. And straight to the point. Some question about wine, of course, but your background, quite classic. It's about a feeling more than a... Because wine, of course, you need some references, some knowledge, but you keep learning all the time and it's changing all the time. So you have to adjust yourself so often. But it was more a feeling. And this feeling definitely happened. And I feel like this interview was yesterday with him. So it went quick. And I had the answer the day after, so ready to start.
And what's he like as a boss, if I can ask?
But you're asking, so it's. I feel like it's more being with a friend in a good way. There is no, it's not laid back or casual, but it's more a friendly relationship. You learn a lot watching at him. He has I thought Austrian people because I don't love cliché, but as a French person, sometimes I refer too much to cliché. And I thought that Austrian people would be a little austere and not really warm. He's more Latin than me.
He loves to laugh, I think.
He loves to laugh a lot. He loves Grüner Veltliner too much, definitely. He should drink much more Bordeaux. It's a personal message that I wanted to make public.
But I feel like you guys have collaborated on things like that, like you did a collaborative tasting that way.
Yes, and it's what I love to do more, of course. I think it's interesting. And it reflects definitely for him and me how we open up at some point our career to another market like New York, being open to other wines. I'm open to Grenoble Veterinary, he's open to Bordeaux. But I think it represents also our different backgrounds in a similar goal.
Eric Rupert likes Bordeaux a lot, right?
Yes. It's one of my main strengths on the floor, to sell Bordeaux wines. So I try to seduce tables, telling, Chef Eric Rupert, one of the favorite wines of Chef Rupert is Bordeaux. And he actually loves drinking Bordeaux with fish, definitely. And it works so well. It works well. You keep the skin, it's grilled, it's smoky, you have a thick sauce, that's it. And if the wine is good, if the cuisine is good, it works. It works. You don't have to make a headache of it. It has to be simple. When you have both great elements, that's natural.
So I think a lot of people listening, or maybe just a lot of people that I encounter in my life, are very curious about what the 4-star sommelier experiences like. What do you think working in the 4-star, 3-star Michelin kind of place is like for you as a sommelier?
It can sound very intimidating. Also, we wear a uniform. We are in black. It can be impressive for the guest who is not used to come at this Michelin star for New York Times places. We use also the test vin. So it's the first time I had to use the test vin, I have to tell you, it's been very challenging for me, because in France you would see test vin in every old houses, but we use them as ashtray. So the first time I had to use the test vin to taste literally with it at the table, I couldn't help to have this vision of my father using the test vin as the ashtray. It's another story. It's a great experience, how to be confident, how to manage pressure. But people most of the time are there to enjoy. So you feel pressure because you know you have to maintain a certain level, a high level of excellence, a level of excellence in service, in everything. You put pressure yourself. It's not something we had from the team at all. It's intimidating, but you get used to it as everything else.
If I were about 31 like you, and I were a young woman, I could see working on the team of Maggie Lacoze as being kind of inspirational, because she's kind of a strong female figure. Is that a fair statement? Or?
It's fair. I love the fact she's still there. And I love the fact to see her in the restaurant. I love she's such a charisma. It's beautiful to see a woman at the head of this restaurant, still being so involved in the place and being such a reference also. I think it's very representative of New York market, open to women. I love that. I don't think I wouldn't like to do my job in France. Not today. It's a chance to be a woman here, I think. We don't realize it, but I think it's a big deal. And yes, being in the team of Maggie Lacoze, it's definitely makes sense to me in this way.
How was it with the customers? I know when I worked 4-star myself, it took me a while to like understand what the people wanted at that level.
Yeah. What do they expect? They expect the best. They expect the best. I think it belongs more to New York, to this market. People here want the best all the time for everything in different areas, and they want to be the best. So when they arrive at regular people or tourists or the person who come to celebrate something, they want the best experience. And without even noticing it, has to be effortless. It has to be smooth.
What have been the biggest challenges for you so far?
The level of wine knowledge, maybe.
That's funny to say that, you know, because I think a lot of Americans would be like, well, I didn't grow up in wine. I didn't grow up at a winery, so I don't really know. But, you know, like that's our thing that we often overcompensate for by learning all these facts, right?
Yeah, you learn really well, I think, here. I have with me in my blood this winemaking past. I mean, seeing everything from the winemaking. But all the theory part, it's here that I learn, actually. So What was the question again?
Oh, what the, what the bigger challenges were.
The level of wine knowledge. I think hard competition is its city. I love that. Competition in a good way. Huh? But the level of knowledge from, we are so many sommeliers here, older or younger. I mean, the level is high. And working with such a big list, how do you keep up with more than 2,000 wines? You just throw yourself in it and you try to not panic. So maybe trying to not panic, it was what I learned the most so far.
Oh, really? There was a level of confidence
I had to compensate a little bit with that.
That's again funny, because if I had one stereotype about French and maybe French women, it's that they're very confident.
We play well.
Yeah,
the confidence.
Yeah. So how long has it been now at Le Bernardin?
Le Bernardin, a year.
Okay.
A year at Aldosan Wine Bar, a year at Le Bernardin.
And where do you think this is going to go? I mean, what's the goal at this point?
Should I announce today that I will steal Aldo's place? No,
no
I don't
I mean,
want to.
Do you think it's always going to be restaurants for you? Or?
No, it will be an experience. How long, I don't have the answer yet. But I want to experience also the winemaking again. It's still something that I need to figure out, but I love to have different projects at the same time. And I think human being, we have so many sides and so many skills. I don't want to limit myself to only one side, please no. So sommelier on the floor will be for a certain moment, and how long I don't know. But so far I'm at Le Bernardin. So far I'm there.
And then, you know, because it's always interesting to ask, what do you think about American wine culture, like the culture of wine here?
I think there is a great story. There is definitely something very strong post-prohibition, all the Californian way also to make wine, and this vision of wine that they are so free to me to make wine with less rules that we have in France. It's more an open way to make wine. I feel like you have more possibilities to make wine in California, for instance, than in very controlled appellation under European system. So the culture here is more, it reflects this. The culture of wine here is more open and more dynamic, more young, but not less serious. Very serious. There is definitely big backbones, I feel, to this wine culture.
By leaving her winemaking home, Marie Véran found out that she'd like to make wine. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you, Levy. Thank you very much.
Marie Véran of Chateau Bourgneuf in Pomerol and also Le Bernardin restaurant here in New York.
All Drink to That is hosted and produced by myself, Levy Dalton. Aaron Skella has contributed original pieces. Editorial assistance has been provided by Bill Kimsey. The show music was performed and composed by Rob Moose and Thomas Bartlett. Show artwork by Alicia Tenoyan. T-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, and so much more, including show stickers, notebooks, and even gift wrap, are available for sale if you check the show website, alldrinktothatpod.com. That's ILLDrinktothatPOD.com, which is the same place you'd go to sign up for our email list or to make one of the crucially important donations that help keep this show operating. You can donate from anywhere using PayPal or Stripe on the show website. Remember to hit subscribe or to follow this show in your favorite podcast app, please. That's super important to see every episode. And thank you for listening.